Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to An Hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we're going to be talking with an author of a book who is winning awards right and left. His subject matter is controversial, but I'll tell you what. It is one of the few fiction pieces that I've ever read that has really kept me totally occupied, and I could not put the book down. The book's title is Pope Annalisa, and it's book one of the First Souls trilogy. And Peter Canova is the author, and I want to welcome you, Peter, to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. It's great to be with you today.
You know, when I don't often review fictitious pieces of material, I'm not interested in the romance novels, although I know that so many people are. And I'm not putting them down, but I really find nonfiction material has so much in it that going to fiction really isn't that interesting to me. You were exceptionally good in this novel, Pope Annalisa, by combining fact into a fictitious format that I think is just absolutely gripping. How did you come up with this concept? What was it that, because this isn't something that just happened overnight. I mean, this novel has got so much information in it, and it's the beginning of a trilogy. It's got so much in it. How long have you been working on this, and what were the triggers that made you decide to take on something that was so controversial as writing about a female pope?
Well, it is a long story, and let me try and compress it for you a bit. I've been working on the book for about 10 years, but you have to understand that that was not continual work. A lot of it was pretty sporadic because I was working in a company with my brother. We did luxury hotels around the world, developed and built luxury hotels around the world. So I was traveling quite a bit, and it was a very intensive job, which didn't leave me a lot of creative time and energy left. So I used to work little pieces of the book on an airplane here and there in a hotel room when I had some downtime. For a couple of years, the book was entirely on the shelf when I got so busy. The genesis of the book was that I was in a screenwriting class over a decade ago, and the instructor came in and said to everybody, I want you all to do a high concept idea and bring it in for a screenplay. And by high concept idea, she meant something that she defined it as something that nobody's ever done before. Well, that's a pretty daunting command, because almost everything we do in life is a permutation of something else that's come before us.
Correct.
But I guess because I was spiritually oriented, my mind started working in this direction where I said, okay, well, what haven't we seen before? And I said, well, you know, we've never seen a female pope before. And I then started to try and figure out, well, you know, what would the world be like with a woman in the office of the papacy, invested in the papacy? And I kind of proceeded from along that line. But, you know, I guess part of the reason, I mean, there's so many currents that went into this. I had always been kind of fascinated by what I had seen the inkling of 10 years ago, but now I see it in full thrust as what I would call the rise of the feminine principle. And by the feminine principle, I don't mean women's liberation or, you know, the fight for equal pay and things of that sort in the political arena. I mean, those are manifestations of something deeper. And I think the deeper thing there is that we have lived in a world that has been so dominated to the male side for several thousand years now. And it wasn't always that way. I think these things are cyclical, because at one time, you know, the worship of the Magna Mater, the Earth Mother, the goddess, was actually prevalent. And I think we're coming full circle now to where you see a a deeper understanding of the feminine side of the divine, that God in the material world expresses itself in both masculine and feminine ways. This is the polarity that makes up the yin yang of the universe, and I see kind of an ascendancy now of the of that female energy, not to hopefully tip the scales again all the way to one side and replace what we've been living with, but to really merge with it and to create a more balanced you know, society, to create more balanced individuals. If we balance the male and female qualities within ourselves, you know, the kind of logical, linear, you know, thinking that that happens in the mind, which is more male-oriented as opposed to the more intuitive, creative type of feeling which happens in the heart, which is more of a female quality. If we balance these things within ourselves, we wouldn't be such fragmented human beings, and of course, that wholeness would then reflect itself out into the world at large. So these were all currents that I think were probably brought together in my psyche. But the real formative part of developing this book occurred when my wife became seriously ill with breast cancer, and I took a year off from work to take care of her. And there was a lot of emotional energy at that mm-hmm. time around us and around the household, around me, and I was getting a lot of channeled information. In fact, this is no joke, I literally burnt out 5 or 6 computers just by being in their proximity. I had so much psychic energy passing through me that people wouldn't even allow me near their computers anymore, and it was kind of hard to get my book done because I kept blowing out my word processors and everything. But finally, I managed to get that done. So it was over that period of time, over that year, that the formative part of the book was completed. But overall, I'd say it was about a 10-year process.
The character Annalisa is one that you portray with tremendous depth. And just from what you have said, and having to be a caretaker for your wife, I would say that had a tremendous impact on your empathy with the female process of thinking, which, as you said, men have it, but they have been oriented to not paying attention to it. And
yeah,
that is something that has been going on for centuries. And we are in a period. This is just my observation. We are in a period where a lot of old paradigms are dying because technology has enabled us to communicate in capacities that were not even imagined 10 or 15 years ago by very many people. Desired.
That's very, right? Very true.
But
yeah,
we're imagined.
No, that's a very true statement, Donna. There's no question about it. I think it's just so evident that the old paradigms are crumbling. In fact, if you almost even want to take the Twin Towers and 9/11 as the beginning of the crumbling of our old world, and you know, we're now in this brave new world, which seems rather harsh. And actually, that's the story of Pope Annalisa. The
mm-hmm.
old world is dying. The new order is being born in war and violence. Where is it heading? And moreover, is Annalisa the cause or the solution to this world? Is she the builder or the destroyer? Part of the complexity of her character is that throughout almost all the book, we don't really know. And if you
mm-hmm.
really think about it, if you really think about it, take a look at the biblical story. When Jesus was performing his miracles 2,000 years ago in Palestine, a significant portion of the population thought he was a sorcerer. The high priest and the Pharisees and other groups that followed that way of thinking must have looked at Jesus and, you know, with a great deal of suspicion and said, well, look, here's a guy that's performing miracles, but they certainly did not think it was for the betterment of mankind, or at least their
mm-hmm.
to their way of thinking, whereas other portions of the population obviously looked upon him as a great healer and a savior. So figures like this are never black and white. Sometimes they come down in history by virtue of the winners writing history, but in reality, figures such as this are never black and white, and everybody really has to sort of choose, I think, in a way, from the depths of their own being to understand such archetypical figures like this and what they're all about.
I think if you look at history, and you portray this very well in your book, but anyone who has been even a mild student of history, whether you're talking about the Macedonians, whether you're talking about Zoroastrianism, whether you're talking about Christianity, the Muslim faith, whatever, those who have come in, or Kuan Yin in the Chinese culture, those that have come in that have been considered the master teachers, whatever their title is, whatever the culture is, always seem to come in during periods when there is a lot of what we would call darkness, when there is tremendous upheaval, geographically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, politically. It's as if it's time for a shift. And mankind has gone through this so many times. And for you to bring in the portrayal of the feminine, an individual coming in, who is bringing this in, who is creating because of a difference in thought. The human being typically does not like change. So when you have someone that is going into an environment that is culturally of a certain disposition and has followed that cultural patterning for maybe 1,000 years plus, and has been challenged but always beat the challenge, either with a war, destruction, or something, but they held their course. And you watch things like this evolve. It is really quite well done what you've been able to encapsulate, the multitude of paradigms. I'll use that word again. It's just, like you said, not black and white. You have business. You have the emotion, you have the religious, you have the just the everyday fears. All of these come in, and it is amazing because myths survive for a reason, and the reason is it's the way to convey truth through story. And
yes,
in the research
absolutely.
That you did this. That you did with this. You really had to do a lot of research on the Catholic Church, didn't you?
A lot of research on the Catholic Church. The book was a combination of maybe 25 years of research on the Catholic Church, on Gnosticism, on ancient spirituality, mm-hmm. and much of it was really channeled through my own meditations. A lot of the book was the convergence of my of information I channeled, which subsequently I would validate in books and other scholastic works that I would read or on the various subjects. So it was kind of a confluence of I guess things mm-hmm. that were being channeled through me and these things. But yes, it's the book very much is about turning our commonly accepted notions from Judeo-Christianity inside out. But not in a way that is meant to, not in a way that is really meant to be church bashing or religion bashing or, you know, I think there's a plethora of books out there that are kind of into that. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly the church has had its share of sins, so to speak, in the past, but nothing is always black and white. The church has done a lot of good too. And yes, this is about the old crumbling and the new being born. But I look at the old as not something necessarily to be destroyed and discarded in place of something radically new, but the thing that's radically new being born out of the vestiges of the old. So mm-hmm. Annalisa does not seek to do what she does outside of the church. She chooses to do it inside of the church as a renewal, as a rebirth in effect. So the new is being born out of the old. And I that's something I was very conscious of doing because I feel there's way too many books out there and too many people out there that kind of go, you know, to the opposite end of the spectrum. They throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, like everything the church did was bad and so we just got to trash it and, you know, start anew. That's not really the perspective of this book. In fact, I don't really think that's the truth of history. Another thing that you mentioned about these figures coming in when things are dark, it's part of the ancient spiritual tradition that is revealed and discussed in this book. And that is exactly what one of the precepts of it was. It's called dispensationalism, and essentially what it says is that God will sort of provide redeemers or beings of light that come in different epochs of history. In fact, it was even stated beautifully in the ancient Indian epic, the Mahabharata from the Bhagavad Gita, and it said something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing here, that when light is on the wane, I shall incarnate from age to set virtue back on its throne. And that was Krishna, who you know is the Hindu god. That is Krishna speaking to Arjuna, saying that he as God shall incarnate from age to age when things are darkest, in order to set the human course back, so that we don't forget the light and we don't forget our origins in the light altogether.
I agree, and I think if someone is a student of history, this is a fascinating patterning to see, because it's in every culture I have ever read about throughout the world, regardless. Now, Annalisa originates out of Africa. Why did you choose Africa?
Well, there are several reasons. First of all, I did live in Nigeria for a number of years, so I was quite familiar with the people and the culture down there. But there was really more to it than that. Africa, or Nigeria, is the most populous country in Africa, and it's almost equally divided between Christianity and Islam. And since the conflict between the West and the Muslim extremists occupies a good portion of this book, Nigeria was a perfect setting for at least the initial part of the book to take place, because it's always been sort of the front lines, the front battle line between the different world outlooks of the two respective religions. It's always been a flashpoint. Another reason is that in Africa, the religions down there, even though most of the people have adopted Christianity, there are still what they call animist religion there, and even those people who have either adopted Christianity or Islam still retain a lot of their beliefs from the native or the natural religion. And religions based on nature, such as they still have down in Africa, are particularly feminine in nature, because they're related to the pulses and the rhythms of the earth, which has always been viewed by almost all cultures as a feminine characteristic. And it's very direct. It's not encumbered like the Catholic Church does, for instance, with these very complex intellectual constructs and theories and dogmas and, what we've been handed down. I mean, look, the average Catholic would not even understand most of the theological precepts and dogmas of the Church. They're just kind of like taught to, like, well, you know, just believe it and don't question it too much, because probably wouldn't understand it anyway. But in the natural religions, it's a much more simple and direct communication with nature, but nature being understood to be part of the divine, that the feminine aspect of God actually incarnated as the world soul and became the very body of the planet. And, you know, there's something of that in the Gaia theory, if you heard about the Gaia theory. The strong Gaia theory essentially says that the planet is sentient and the planet is alive, and that has always been feminine in nature, and many of these naturalistic religions kind of take that view. So the spirituality that Annalisa teaches is something that seeks to circumvent all the complex theological and intellectual constructs of the Church, to go to a more direct experience of the divine, of God and the divine within each person. And that was very much related to her upbringing. She had a very interesting early upbringing. She was raised half by a shaman in the village and half by a Catholic nun. So Annalisa had a foot in both worlds.
And that is what makes your character so fascinating. And it makes the story very complex, because you've brought in those very components that make it difficult for segments of thinking to be comfortable. And I think that that is not a bad thing. I think it's good to realize that it's what the character of the person is that makes the difference, not what the background is. I mean, we've battled this even today. I mean, we have all these isms that go on in life, and so often they are created on a cultural basis or an environmental basis by, many times, something that people don't even remember the cause of, but they've adopted.
And Donna, you're raising another great point there, which is, In this book is not meant to replace one ism by another. I have no isms in this book that I'm trying to preach, nor am I trying to start a new religion. What the whole impetus behind this book, the whole reason I wrote this book, was to get people to get out of the box that we've all been put into, in terms of our religion and spirituality, to step outside that box and look at things from a new perspective, but a perspective that encourages you to take responsibility for your own spirituality. Now, responsibility is a popular concept these days. It's like you need to take responsibility for this and responsibility for that, but the one thing that we never take responsibility for is our own spiritual growth. And the reason is that one of the reasons why the spiritual part or the Gnostic part of the early Christian church was able to be suppressed and destroyed by the Orthodox Christianity that we had today is because developing your own spirituality and taking spiritual responsibility is a lot of work. It's not just something that falls into your lap. You have to seek with fervently, not just seek intellectually. You have to seek with all your heart and your mind together in order to get the experiences that propel you along the spiritual path. And that's not an easy thing. And you go through dark nights of the soul, and great darkness attracts great light. So when you're on the spiritual path, you're often all these encumbrances are thrown in your way or challenges that you have to overcome. And now look at it on the other side, whereas the Catholic Church or in the Christian denomination, essentially the formula is, well, don't worry about all that stuff. Go to church, say your prayers, go to confession once in a while, the priest will absolve you, and, you're good with God again. Now, that was a hell of a lot simpler for the masses than, really conducting, a lifetime of, developing their own spirituality. And a lot of people, obviously, we were the allegory of the Garden of Eden, where we were cast out of Eden to till the ground by the sweat of our brow. People are out there trying to, make a living, put bread on the table, put the kids in college. I mean, everyone's out there struggling for survival. So the thing that's sort of down the bottom of the ladder is understanding what we're doing here. What we really are, what a human being really is, what we're meant to be, what we could develop into. These are all these kind of philosophical questions and, that are very important, I think, to our being in the long run. But in terms of our material existence, they kind of get shoved pretty far down the ladder.
When I was reading the book, and for those of you that have just tuned in, we're talking with Peter Canova, who has written an absolutely intriguing book called Pope Annalisa, and it's a very complex book. It is a fascinating read, but Peter, one of the many aspects of your book that I really enjoyed was the political weaving that you did, the tapestry of international political alliances, associations, both within the structured organization as well as outside of a structured organization. And I thought, when I finished the book, you have portrayed something that is going on today.
Yes.
It is going on today as we speak. The tremendous conflicts, the lust for power, the aspect of greed, the intimidation of propaganda, so many things that are occurring today are very, very much in the book. But again, human history repeats itself over and over again. With this being the first, what is it that you've got number two and number three? Because this was totally captivating.
Yeah, the second book is called The 13th Disciple, and it alternates actually between biblical times and the near future, which is where Pope Annalisa takes place. The characters of the first book, Pope Annalisa, it kind of cuts back and forth with their origins and in previous lives, and it goes back to the Holy Land that very much the 13th Disciple is actually Mary Magdalene. And the story, much of the story, centers around Mary Magdalene. The final book is called The Light of Distant Suns. I've got substantial portions in, I would say, a very rough outline form of the second book done, but that's pretty much been put in the shelf because marketing this first book, Don, is, I can't tell you what a full-time job it is. I'm up at 6 in the morning, and I usually don't knock off with phone calls, computers, and other, the other things that I'm doing, vast volumes of emailing and developing content until about 9 o'clock at night. So it's not left a lot of room to really work concertedly on the second book. So hopefully if all your good listeners out there will buy Pope Annalisa, it might give me a little bit of break to get book number two done. But in terms of what you just mentioned about the politics and so forth, I might point out, we've talked about some of the spiritual aspects of the book, and it's really, Pope Annalisa, though, is really two books. It's a thriller. It's set in the near future about a miracle-working African nun. It's a world where resources of oil and water are scarce. Iran has gone nuclear, and the friction between great powers is close to boiling over into a nuclear confrontation. And all of a sudden, Annalisa, who comes along, really who's upsetting the apple cart on all sides. The Muslim fundamentalists don't like her because her healings down in Africa are causing some Muslims to convert. And the church is very suspicious of her because she's acting outside of the authority of the authority of the church. So, you know, right away from the get-go, she has a lot of enemies. And in fact, there's much to be suspicious about her because with her upbringing by a shaman and so forth, and her actions throughout the book are, you know, quite frankly, they're kind of questionable from the standpoint of the reader as to what is her real agenda. Of course, the parallel story is one that we've kind of discussed here on this phone call quite a bit, which is the spiritual aspect. But this book is a thriller, and I think the very interesting thing about the book is I labored and I really tried hard to walk a tightrope and balance this book so that people who I would say are not the most spiritually clued in, who are just really looking for a good enthralling read, could pick up this book and read it and absolutely love it. And they have. And then other people who are more spiritually minded pick it up and they see, you know, that there's some really profound material in here. The political part of the story is really more related to the thriller aspect of it, in terms of what you just described. So I wouldn't want to leave the listeners thinking that this is just a fictionalized form of a spiritual self-help book. It does have very practical spiritual messages in here, not theoretical ones, but very practical ones that I think people can incorporate into their lives because I'm a Capricorn and I've experienced a lot of spiritual phenomena firsthand myself. And this book is about saying that we can all have a direct experience of the divine, a real session with the divine where we actually get messages coming through that will help us guide our lives. And I think everybody is capable of doing that. So the practical spirituality is kind of pointing towards a path that people can take. But at the end of the day, again, it's not trying to replace one ism for another. It's really trying to encourage people to seek their own spiritual path, and it maybe provides some signposts and some guidelines, you know, within the development of the characters as they see how the characters live their lives. It might give them some signals as to how they can start out in the path, but it's not meant to be... never mistake the signpost for the destination. This book is a signpost, and the destination is something that each reader has to find.
I'd like to ask you a question, Peter. This obviously, because of all the awards that you have won, and we'll be giving out your website so that people can go to your website and check things out. I mean, this has been recognized by many as being just one, very, very well written. Number two, the multiple levels in the story, and three, that you have portrayed some values and some considerations that people are talking about today that are very, very real, and it doesn't take away from anyone's background or faith at all. In fact, it is, I think, gives images of liberation the way it should be. But how has this, what kind of feedback have you gotten from people that are associated with organized religions when they have read this? I mean, I would imagine you're getting all kinds of fallout.
Well, not really.
Good.
Perhaps when the book gets more widely read, we'll start to get some of that type of feedback. Because remember, it's just really newly coming out in the market. I mean, I did a test version with Amazon.com and a paperback version that's been out there for almost a year or so. Got nothing but great comments and 5-star reviews on Amazon on it. The hardcover version has yet to come out. Its publication date is June 1st, although it's currently available. I think if you go into your bookstore and you order the hardcover version, it's already available through most bookstores right now. And I do hope the readers, if the readers have a few extra dollars to spend, I would hope that they would buy the hardcover because that's what really helps the sales of the book and maybe can help me get book two launched. But the comments that I've gotten, I'll tell you a couple anecdotes. First of all, one of the comments on Amazon.com is from a Catholic gentleman, And he said, when I first told my Catholic friends about Pope Annalisa, they were horrified at the idea of a nun or a female pope. And he said, you know, when I read this book, he said, I was thoroughly immersed in it. It was very believable within the context of the book. He said, I didn't find a single thing in here that I would say is offensive to Catholics. I also have some longtime personal family friends who are fundamentalist Christians. And when they expressed an interest in reading the book, I gave it to them with a huge disclaimer. I said, you know, guys, I know your belief, something about your beliefs, and I just want to warn you right now that this may not be something that sort of squares with, you know, with your belief system. And they said, oh, that's okay. You know, we'd still like to read it. Bottom line is both of them read it, and they're writing me asking me when the second book is going to be done because they want to get that ASAP. So I was actually a little bit surprised in that second case because I thought for sure, I mean, and they're pretty, you know, I would say mainline fundamentalist Baptist. And they did not, they were not, you know, offended by the book. And I think it's because the book does not seek to take people's beliefs, the current belief systems that, you know, are commonly held in the United States about religion and things. It's not really meant to be a head-on attack about that. I think that that's a tremendous waste of energy. The book simply points in a different direction, and it's about spirit transcending religion. And it transcends religion by harking back to an ancient universal spiritual tradition, the threads of which ran through every major religion that we have today, plus the pagan religions. And this mystical tradition, which I you know, if you want, I can describe a little bit of it. It's a little complex, but I can describe it.
Well, we're almost out of time, so I think we won't be able to go into that.
Sure. But, I mean, it formed, this ancient spiritual tradition formed the core of the original religions of Judaism, mm-hmm. Christianity, and Islam. And some vestiges of it today, the Jews have the Kabbalah, Islam has the Sufis, and Christianity used to have the Gnostics. And these three mystical cores of these religions have more in common with each other than they have with their outer religions. And eventually, what usually happens is, you know, prophets speak the heart of God and their followers start religions. So, the spirituality really tries to get closer to the source of revelation than let's say the institutionalized religions who have suppressed and forgotten a lot of what it was all about originally.
PopeAnnalisa.com. That's the website you go to. This book is excellent. I'd recommend it to anyone. It is thought-provoking. It has got so much that is relevant to today's environment. It is, I think, something that when it's read, if you're thoughtful about your reading, but you sit back and enjoy it, enjoy the story, it will captivate you. You will find it very difficult to put the book down. Peter, I want to thank you again. Your website is PopeAnnalisa.com. That's PopeAnnalisa.com. This is Donna Sebo. Peter, again, thank you for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break, and we will be back in just a moment. Get the book.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast, with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, ttap.com.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number if you'd like to call in and chat with me. I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Now, I do know we've got a caller on the line, but before we go to the caller, I want to let those of you know that are listeners to the show that I'm putting together a book regarding stories of the paranormal. I'm aiming for 100 stories, and we've got about 25 right now. So if you have a story regarding a ghost, animal communication, whatever the subject matter might be, and you would like to have your story considered for this book, I'd love to have you send it to me. Send it to me via email to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and be sure to put in the subject line story for Donna's book or the Donna Sebo show. Put something there that will enable me to identify that this is a story that you're sending me. I get so many emails daily that I really would appreciate that. That enables me to go to it very, very quickly and put the little sign on it that says that the message is of high importance, because putting this book together is really proving to be quite a fun adventure. I'm really enjoying this a great deal because I love the stories people are sending me. Okay, let's go to our first caller today and show you how it's done on the Donna Sebo Show. If you're a first-time listener, all you need to know is that I just want your first name or your initial, and then after that, sit back, relax, I'll tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything that you like. Hello, listener. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Al, and I'm from Novi, Michigan.
From Novi, Michigan?
Correct.
All right. And I'm sorry, I couldn't hear your name, dear.
Oh, I said Al.
Al, okay. That's great. All right, now, Al, I need to let you know we've got a little bit of a time delay. And whenever this happens with telephone lines, then just take a deep breath when I finish talking and then start in on whatever it is. But I'll give you my information first, because otherwise we'll be talking over each other and it becomes rather noisy, and we don't want it that way. Okay, Elle, the first thing that I'm looking at here is pay attention to detail. Don't assume anything. You've got a lot of loose ends that you're trying to tie up, tie down, so that you can have a clean slate to work with by the end of June. And I want to compliment you because you've been doing this very, very methodically. I want to congratulate you. You're doing a very, very good job on this. Now, what you're going to find is that you've got a number of distractions these next 6 weeks that are going to come in. But if you keep yourself focused, don't if you had an objective, let's say you had 25 issues that you wanted to take care of, well, pick three. Focus on those three and let the other 22 sit on the sidelines. Then any interruptions that come in, you're focused on those three and you take care of them. And then you do three more. And then you do another three. Maybe you're only able to work on one at a time. Keep your focus. Methodically, consistently, you'll be able to have everything in order as you desire it to be by the end of June. That's all it's going to take is that consistency. The interferences are going to be some, you know, things that you're going to handle. But it doesn't mean you're going to be thrown off course. It merely means you're developing a level of discipline that is going to serve you very, very well. This is a hard-working year. This is a year that demands attention to facts, not to assumptions, but to facts. And that is where you need to really pay attention. And there's a few little old issues that normally don't bother you, but I think because you're so determined about tying down all these loose ends, that these things that normally wouldn't bother you are going to cause a bit of interference. Don't worry about it. Just take it in stride. You're going to be okay. You do have to have some dental work, though. There is something with a tooth that is deteriorating, and apparently this is something that's been going on for a long while. So just do what you need to do and take care of it. And even though the expense may be more than what you'd like to deal with, you're going to be able to handle it. What's on your mind, dear? What did you want to ask me?
I have a friend of mine who is in England right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering, when do you see them returning? Their name is Matt.
Well, I'm getting 2 to 3, so I don't know if that's days or weeks. Why are you concerned? Maybe it's months. What are you looking at? Why are you concerned about them? They seem to be doing
well,
very well.
Well, they had a lot of misfortunes happen while they were there, and they were trying to get back even sooner than they are right at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And while they were there, they were working, and they were held up, we'll say, and then so their money kind of got misplaced, shall we say. So they are waiting for their money to be wired to them in England. So I'm hoping that happens for them soon so they can get back home. So I was wondering how you thought about that.
Actually, these experiences, though they were upsetting to them, I think really have benefited them in many, many ways. Because they have, I think, come to value different things. But actually, their trip hasn't been a bad trip. It really hasn't been. And I know with the eruption of the volcano, that affected a lot of the travel, and there were other things that went on. But I do think that they're going to come out of this benefited in so many ways that it'll take them a while to be able to recognize it, but I think that this was one of the best things that they've ever experienced on many, many levels, even though they have had their challenges. But the trip overall hasn't really been a bad trip for them. It really hasn't. And they're going to be going back.
Okay.
Why are you so worried about them, dear? They're going to be fine.
Well, I just feel bad because they emailed me and they seem pretty sad about not being able to get home, and I just feel bad about it for them.
Well, what I want you to do is realize that this has got a lot of blessings for them that, again, they may be focusing on something that is really right in front of them, but they're going to come home. They're going to be fine. They're really going to be fine.
Okay.
There's a lot of benefits that have come out of this experience for them. So I think that they're going to have some wonderful stories to tell you that are going to be very realistic, but they're going to be home safe and sound. So I don't know if it's 2 to 3 days, if it's 2 to 3 months. It's not that long a period. They're going to be back home.
Okay. Well, I thank you, and your show is beautiful.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad, Elle, that you're having a chance to listen to it. You have a magnificent evening now in Michigan.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, dear. This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat with me. 888-815-9756. Well, let's see. I know we're going to be going on break pretty soon, and I have some real interesting stories that I think you might enjoy. And they're stories, well, that maybe some of you could relate to. And I'm going to choose one so that when we come back from break, I'll share it with you. Also, I want to tell you about a wild and wacky invention. It makes me chuckle every time I find somebody coming up with something unique, especially when it comes to cooking. Can you imagine digital cooking? Yes, they're coming up with something digitally done. Always is fascinating. I think we're getting closer and closer to the Jetsons lifestyle. Remember that cartoon series? That was one of my favorites. Always enjoyed the Jetsons. Anyway, this is Donna Sebo. We'll be coming back in just a moment. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-815-9756. We're coming right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, before we went on break, I told you I had a very, very special story to tell about, and I'm going to be doing that, and it's called The Golden Thread. Joan Anderson shared it with me, and I wanted to share it with you. She's a wonderful author. But before I do that, I wanted to talk about digital cooking. I don't know about you, but sometimes the schedule gets so fast, so busy, so hectic, you want something that you really wish you could be a bewitched specialist, blink your eyes and everything would be ready. Well, any of us who love cooking know that it always takes time. I don't care. You can use package mixes or whatever, but you always have to plan your time. If you're going to use an automatic timer on your stove, which I have one of those and I dearly love it, because if I want to roast a chicken or if I've got ribs I'm doing or something else, that can be starting on the timer while I'm busy doing something else. And I love that modern convenience. But still, you have to prepare the food, you have to get your spices, you have to do all kinds of things. Well, guess what? I've got a picture of a unit in front of me, and I thought, I don't know that I'd buy this, but digital cooking, three-dimensional computer printers may one day cook our meals. Now, right there, that just makes me think, okay, let's see what somebody's come up with. Now, this came out of MIT. Some of their students, their design students. Well, MIT has produced some of the most phenomenal thinkers and original thinkers, and students, they're going to be the first ones to tell you they want stuff that is going to be add water, mix, and we've got it. We don't have time to eat anything else. That's one of the reasons why ramen noodles are so successful, because that's all I had to do. even though it's all carbs and most of them gain weight from eating it, they add water, mix it, they've got something, it nourishes them, and they're off and running to classes. Well, there were two students, Marcelo Coho and Amit Zoran, who decided they wanted to have a personal food factory, but they wanted to use the food technology of industry that is going to assist them. So this is what they decided they were going to do. They were going to layer ingredients in the same way that a printhead layers drops of ink, and it creates a different way of cooking. I guess you could think about lasagna. You know how lasagna is layered? Now, this is how it works. Now, this is a square machine, and it has all kinds of colored canisters on the top. And what you do, you fill the canisters on the top with ingredients of a recipe, and then you enter the directions digitally. And the device draws down the correct combinations of ingredients and attached nozzles that cool, heat, and mix the flavors in their proper procedure. Now, if these tests work, apparently this KitchenAid, as it is being described, and it's supposed to be available by 2013. Now, this is going to be for those people that really have a lot of time, I think, because just the thought of having to fill a bunch of containers, having to put a recipe in, and having to go through all of this procedure, that reminds me of what I went through with my first computer many years ago when it came out, and I was ready to pitch it out the window. So I don't know. I think they're on to something, but I'm not so sure that the average woman in the household is going to be so interested in this. But you never know. It's the beginning of something. So it's coming out of students at MIT, and we may see it by 2013. However, who knows what else may come up by then. Fascinating stuff. The imagination of people is always amazing. Well, I told you I had a good story. If you want to give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. This is called The Golden Thread. But before I tell you about it, I want you to know we're going to be talking about animals tomorrow. Danielle McKinnon is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about the Spirit Whisperer, which has a wonderful series of stories in it. And Danielle is a person that really has a passion for animal communication. So that's what we're going to be talking about tomorrow. Tell your friends, and I hope you can join me. There was a fellow by the name of Kevin who was on a radio station in Toronto, Canada, and he was telling listeners in Toronto a story of personal experience. Now, this occurred to him when he was 17 years old, and he was deciding to run in his very first marathon. Now, Kevin had had a grandfather, and his grandfather had died when he was just a baby. He had always been close to his grandmother, who lived in Scotland. And before he went into the race, because he was in touch with her frequently, he called her and he said, "I want you to pray for me in this marathon. This is really my very first marathon, and I'm scared, and I've been practicing real hard." And she said, "Well, I'll tell you what. I'll send you as many prayers as I possibly can." Well, Kevin entered this marathon, and he was running well. But 2 miles before the end of the marathon, he felt like physically he was just falling behind. And he was getting frustrated with himself because he had trained so hard. And he said, "When I was thinking about this frustration, there was a younger person about my age that was in shorts and running shoes, and this person took over. And he was just zipping by me, and he sort of slowed down, and I tried to catch up with him, and when he did, Kevin said to this young man, 'I'm so tired, I'm ready to just give up.' Well, this other runner said to him, 'Nope, you can't do it. You just keep on going. I'm going to be right behind you all the way.' Well, Kevin was feeling differently. Wow, somebody that was going to pace him. That was terrific. So he felt a surge of energy, and he ran on. And he could hear the other runner behind him. Well, Kevin managed to cross the finish line. And when he turned around, to his amazement, the pavement was empty. Now, a few days later, Kevin came across an old family album and found a yellowed photo of a young man in running shorts. He got goosebumps all over. It was the very same boy who had encouraged him during the race. Kevin was intrigued, the chills running all over his body. On the back was written the young man's name. It was his grandfather. When he was 17 years of age, Kevin had sorely needed the boost to his self-image and the stamina to get things done. He realized that he could win if he worked hard, and someone special was watching over him that gave him the confidence to move further than just running a marathon, to move on into his adult life. That was his granddad. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. We've got a great show tomorrow. Hope you're going to join us. And take joy in the moment. It's the very thing that creates your future. Right now is your moment of destiny. Go for it. This is Donna Sebo. Talk with you tomorrow. Same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.